Back, everybody. I will look for a motion to get out of executive session.
I move we get out of executive session.
This is Albert. I'll second.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, we are out. I will advise that the board has not taken any formal action on the matters discussed while we're in executive session. Going to our agenda for today brings us to resolution number, it's under A, G20-21, appointment of officers of the corporation. So, this basically appoints Alan, doesn't it? Okay. So, Alan, you want to read your own resolution or talk about your own resolution about appointing yourself to the executive director position?
Before the board is a resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority relating to the Office of Executive Director and Secretary Treasurer.
All right. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I would like to move that we approve resolution number G20-21.
I'll second that, Bernie.
All right. Discussion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert again. Working with Alan over the past year and specifically the past 2 months, really working on the budget and audit subcommittee, I've really appreciated Alan's grabbing this organization by the reins and taking control and setting a new vision for this agency. And I really am thankful that you're here and that you're going to lead us in a new path. And I just appreciate everything that you've done and will do in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Albert. Bernie and then Anna.
First of all, I'd like to echo what Albert said, but and add that in my time on the board, and I've been here a while now, I would like to think that we have a new executive director that is going to be the most pro-development director we've had. And he understands risk and reward. And how can you have a better executive director that understands risk and reward? So I compliment you, Alan, and I'm welcome aboard. We're grateful to have you.
Thank you, Bernie. Anna?
Mr. Chairman, the general public may want to know the process that the board took prior to the resolution. And so as I understand it, Mr. Chairman, you appointed a committee of 3 board members and that we put a solicitation out on the street to advertise the position. I can't speak to exactly where, but I know it was advertised statewide for a new executive director, and that applications were reviewed by the committee, and there was a group that was selected for interview. So if you could just go into the process of how we arrived at, I certainly support all of the comments that were previously made, but just want to make sure that we have a record in place that shows the process that we went through, and then the final interviews that were put in place to make a selection of the best candidate for the job for Alaska.
Well, in a brief discussion on that, I will say that our HR director went out in solicitation for the executive director position for ADA, advertised both in the state of Alaska and nationally for it. We received numerous applications, and a subcommittee of myself, Julie, Commissioner Anderson, and board member Julie Sandy, with the HR director, called that group down to approximately 6. That subcommittee then interviewed those 6 candidates, selected the 2, and then the board picked from the 2 finalists, which Alan was the ultimate selectee. So that's a short version. I would like to thank my subcommittee members, both Julie's, for the time spent. I thought it was well worth it. We got to interview some very, very nice people, all walks of life, all different parts of the country. And but at the end of the day, I echo what both Bernie and Albert have said about our choice with Alan. So, is there any further comments? All right. Hearing none, I will call for the question. Sherry, would you poll the board?
Ms. Eddie?
Yes.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Pendick?
I have to recuse.
Okay. Albert, you're next.
Yes.
Yes. Mr.
Carl? Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes. And for the record, Bill, would you, on your recuse?
My conflict is I'm on the MAA Board of Directors who's a participant in this program.
And the choosing the executive director?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm already moved on to the other one. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So would Board Member Kendick like to vote?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm going. Okay. It's been a long day, Bill, yeah. But it hasn't been that long.
All I could think of was the big salami when this happened. I
think my comment got him. All right. So we're done with A. So with the board's indulgence, I'd like to switch C first before B. We have Joe Balash here with Oil Search waiting, and if the board's approval, I'd like to let Mr. Balash come out and visit with us and talk about with our new executive director. Congratulations on resolution G20-24.
What we have before the board is a resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority entering into the Memorandum of Understanding and Cost Reimbursement Agreement with Oil Search Alaska on the surface infrastructure associated with the PICA project. And I would like to ask Joe Balash, can you join us, please?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Joe Balash. I'm the Senior Vice President for External Affairs at Oil Search Alaska. And this is a presentation here, just kind of waiting for the technical side here to load up. But happy to begin just in general, tell you guys a little bit about Oil Search. Some of you may be familiar with the company, but we're relatively new to Alaska. We're not a new company, however. We were founded back in 1929 in Papua New Guinea, and we have been in the oil and gas business for that full duration. It was only in the 1990s that we began to operate as a company in the lead on particular assets, and here we are. If you can, do we have a clicker? Scrolls. All right. You got it. Okay. So, just the topics I'll cover here in the course of the presentation: who Oil Search is, a little bit of an overview of the pickup project itself, the work that we completed this past winter, the financing option that we've had some preliminary discussions with the staff about, and the MOU that we would like to enter into with ADA, and then talk about some of the specific benefits both to ADA and the state of Alaska generally. So again, as I mentioned, we were established in 1929 in Papua New Guinea, participated in all of the exploration activity that took place there. We're publicly listed under the ASX and the PNG exchange, and we have a complicated balance sheet, but the bottom line for us, the total liquidity is at $1.67 billion as of June 30. We have approximately 1,200 employees worldwide. That's largely in PNG, Sydney, and Alaska, although we do have a couple of employees in the Middle East and a couple in Asian markets, Japan and Singapore, connected to our LNG activities. One of the things that is core to our business approach is a commitment to community engagement and relationships. It's provided us a competitive advantage in PNG. It's an approach that we've brought to Alaska and believe is going to serve us well as in addition to the communities in question. We have a very strong commitment and focus on ESG, environment, sustainability, and governance. It's a rather hot term in the financial world these days. With an increasingly sharp focus on greenhouse gas emissions, but more to the point, sustainability in terms of the impact on individuals and communities affected by development. We're an experienced operator of remote oil production facilities, and we're a participant in a world-class LNG project. That's all in PNG. And I had an opportunity to visit that country last November. When you get past certain aspects of the differences between our respective climates, there's a lot of things that are actually quite similar to Alaska. The terrain is rugged. The infrastructure is incredibly limited. The local governments and relationships and clans are quite complicated. And there are seasonal windows in which you can conduct activities, meaning when the rain starts, helicopters don't fly and roads don't get traveled very much. So our board is quite familiar with the business that we face here in Alaska in terms of remote locations, seasonal windows of opportunity, expensive exploration, and, you know, the importance of local engagement and relationships. So that's what we bring to Alaska, and we've had some success here so far. And we didn't just parachute out of nowhere. We bought into Alaska, specifically the acreage position that had been put together by Armstrong Oil and Gas, and they had partnered then with Repsol. So Repsol remains a partner, but we have, in essence, purchased Armstrong's interest. It's a 51-49 relationship, and that brings us to the Pikka development. This is a world-class project. We have third-party engineering estimates that put our 2C resources, their contingent resources, at 728 million barrels. The project itself has been permitted by the Corps of Engineers through a NEPA process. It would be three drilling pads with a central production facility, operations center, and would then connect via pipeline into the KRU system and on to TAPS. We've got all of our regulatory approvals, a land use agreement with our surface owner, which is Kukpik, the village corporation from Nootsit. We've assembled a team of people from industry that have Arctic experience and specifically North Slope experience, and we think that's being proven out to be a sound approach in our success here over the last winter, and we'll get to some of that. We've got a small footprint in terms of our impact on the surface, and in terms of the size of the prize, I mentioned the 728 million barrels. When all three pads are into production and at peak plateau, we expect that will be approximately 135,000 barrels a day. These leases are all state leases, although some are subject to the jointly managed land settlement with ASRC. So these are leases that are of relatively recent vintage, paying the 16 2/3 royalty share due to the state.
Joe, is this your first Oil Search's first Arctic experience?
It is. And when we became the operator of the Pikka unit in March of 2018, there were three people in the Alaska company, two of them Australian. We now are just over 130 30 people and a very strong Alaska contingent with experience working on the slope. We've got people from companies with legacy interests or experience at BP, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, Shell, and some non-Alaska experience as well.
What percentage are Alaskans?
I think that after our most recent seasonal change, we are approaching 90. I think we're right in that 90% range. We have a few employees that are down in Monrovia, California, working on the engineering side with Worley Parsons. And we have a couple that are from Utah.
So, Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, this PIT unit, wasn't that originally, you mentioned Armstrong and Repsol.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, wasn't Repsol the operator, and then it went to Armstrong as the operator, and now you're the operator?
Originally, it was Armstrong who assembled the land position. They brought in Repsol, and Repsol became the operator. They conducted some of the exploration work, but under the terms of the operating agreement, Armstrong was not satisfied with certain aspects, and so there was a change of control, basically, back to Armstrong. And it was Armstrong who filed the original NEPA application and paperwork. We then bought Armstrong's position. So that 51-49 had been the arrangement between Armstrong and Repsol, as I understand it.
Okay. Is Repsol still committed financially to you? I mean, are they still committed to be putting money in, or are they, where are they at? Where are you at with Repsol?
Sure. Through the chair, Member Carl, the arrangement with Repsol is governed by an operating agreement, formal agreement between the two parties that is in good standing. We have a work plan and budget. I will say every company in the oil and gas industry on the planet has had to reconsider everything in the last 6 months, and that's no different in this case. You know, this project itself is now, unfortunately, due to the circumstances earlier this year, deferred. We had originally hoped to enter the final investment decision this fall, but due to the crash in oil prices in particular, neither of us is ready to take that step this year. What this slide attempts to illustrate for people reading it is, you know, you can see the wedge of production. This is the North Slope production curve, and the dark blue represents Pikka, and the amount of production we expect to or project to bring in and online. The next lighter shade of blue is what we call our growth case. And, you know, that's got some assumptions in there about what might ultimately happen, but we have a very large exploration position. And this past winter, we had some encouraging results in that regard. So this is not just about the Pikka development. We believe that we have a lot to offer the state of Alaska for a very long time that will be a substantial and material impact on the throughput of TAPS for quite some time.
What is your acreage?
It is nearly all in the state portion of the slope. We have a little bit of NPRA interest, and we're located primarily between the Colville River and the Kuparuk River unit, and we go south further than most folks. Our total acreage, I think, is sitting in the 400,000-acre range right now. We also have partnered with Mr. Armstrong again out to the east, an area that has at times been referred to as Lenape, but it lies between Prudhoe and Point Thompson and south of Adami.
Did you pick up Great Bear's assets on the slope?
We did not.
Did not.
So as I mentioned, unfortunately, we did have to postpone our final investment decision. We've been working very closely with our partners, Repsol, to examine any and every way we can reduce our cost and get our break-even price down to a manageable point in the circumstances we now face, given the price of oil. But we have an outstanding organization that is working away at that. Our regulatory authorization from the Corps is basically the permit that allows us to lay gravel, which is the most important piece of a development on the North Slope. And importantly, this project includes a road. And the experience on the North Slope in the last 25 years has seen largely roadless projects move forward in their development. And then you see that at Alpine as you move west out to GMT-1 and GMT-2 with ConocoPhillips, as well as Badami and Point Thompson to the east. And there were a lot of reasons why those developments took place without roads, but they do lead to certain challenges logistically, and also cost-wise, but something that doesn't necessarily get a ton of awareness is the impact it has on locals, the airplane noise, the constant monitoring of wildlife and movement of goods and services through the airfields has an impact on local hunters in particular. It's something in one of my former lives we heard a lot about in the NEPA process. And so by having a year-round road that serves the facilities, we're going to be able to minimize some of that aircraft conflict.
So, Joe, what's your the parameters for you to bring this back for an FID decision? Where does Repsol and Oil Search think oil has to be in order to reconsider?
Well, we're not allowed to discuss prices with Repsol due to antitrust concerns. What I can tell you is prior to this spring and when we entered 2020, our board was prepared to move into FEED, and the break-even price was in the mid-40s for this project. And that's a long-term NPV number, you know, not necessarily a day-to-day cash number. That said, what we have expressed to the market in our filings on the ASX is that we still expect to be able to move forward with the project and have full field production in 2025. You know, exactly what our schedule is going to look like and what our profile is going to look like. I think, you know, we're working closely with Repsol and hope to have an update later this year that we'll have to make public and express to the market. And the timing works out, I think, rather well with this process because we'll be able to take that into account as we assemble an option.
Joe, could you tell us what Oil Search's relationship is with the government of Papua New Guinea? And are they an investor in Oil Search, and are they on your board?
So the short answer to both of those questions is no. However, a couple things that are important to note, and I'm going to strain my understanding of the specifics here, but as a company that is chartered in Papua New Guinea, we enjoy certain rights and privileges when it comes to gaining licenses for exploration and land positions in the country. And that's a big part of why we are there, remain there, and have had some success, is we basically became the partner with the large companies back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. to get those land positions and allow the development to take place. In terms of the PNG government, they are not an owner of the company. This is not a national oil company. At one point in time, I believe they did acquire an equity position, like a 10%-ish type of position, but that's no longer the case. So our shareholders, board members, many of them are from Papua New Guinea. Many are from Australia.
But doesn't most of your revenue for oil search come out of Papua New Guinea one way or another?
Today, yes, absolutely.
And so where does that come from?
Oh, well, so we have the interest in oil production as well as gas. Papua New Guinea, the discoveries that were made there mostly in the late 60s and early 70s and on into the 80s was a significant amount of oil and an enormous amount of natural gas. And so we operate pipelines, production facilities, and they cross mountain terrain that is remarkably steep and covered in jungle, and so those sales of oil and LNG are where we get our revenue.
So is somehow Exxon has spent some $34 billion over the last few years, and is that and they're spending, and I believe they built an LNG plant. It's all gas. Is that something that Oil Search is involved in, or is that your gas?
We are a 27% partner in that plant. And so one of the things that we take some pride in, I mentioned our relationships with locals is a competitive advantage. It's so much so that even ExxonMobil allows us to operate certain of their assets in the country. They don't let anybody operate their stuff, right? So
BP do all the diamond or so.
Well,
that's another story.
Yeah, but the point here really is that we do have a long-term relationship with ExxonMobil in PNG.
So is there something, I read something just recently, and correct me if I'm right or wrong, but I don't know if he's a prime minister and what in Papua New Guinea, the prime minister they have for what's their head government guy there?
They have a parliamentary system, and the prime minister is James Marape.
I read something where he's upset with Oil Search and is looking for some money from you guys. Is there any truth to that statement?
I wouldn't characterize it that way. The situation with regard to the LNG project and whether or not certain benefits have or have not been paid to provincial participants and other local entities has been a matter of dispute and complaint. But at this point in time, as far as I'm aware, and I haven't seen any new news today, we don't have any outstanding obligations or payments that are unpaid.
So you don't see that as anything that could affect your cash flow for the future?
That is directionally correct, yes. We don't anticipate anything like that. What we are facing in Papua New Guinea is limited opportunity for growth due to the change in government there last year. But in some ways that's a good news story for Alaska because it puts the Alaska opportunities, it's sort of at the front of the line when it comes to capital from the company.
Hasn't Exxon just approved just recently? In the last few months, the second phase to their LNG plant? At least that's what I've been told by somebody in Exxon that is actually over there.
So the status of the expansion for the PNG LNG facility was intended to be two separate expansions, one with ExxonMobil, one with Total, and we were partners in both. And it's one of these arrangements where both go or neither goes. And so the O'Neill government, which was the last government, we had struck a bargain on the terms for the Total expansion. But the government changed before the Exxon expansion moved forward. And so there were some very difficult negotiations that took place last year and on into the early part of this year. But those don't appear to be advancing at this time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. We'll let you continue with your presentation.
Sure thing. So while the project has been deferred, we do see that opportunity still very much in front of us, and we are continuing to pursue that again with a target of 2025 for first oil. The specifics, though, we hope to have later this year announced jointly with our partners. Some of the benefits that would accrue here as the PICA project moves forward, obviously the state of Alaska stands to benefit significantly in the form of royalty payments as well as production tax and property tax payments and corporate income tax. TAPS throughput will go up, meaning the tariff will go down. And so not only will the state realize the benefit of our barrels, but we will improve the value of every other state barrel that's produced on the North Slope. Increased utilization of the infrastructure helps lengthen the life of all the assets in question, whether it's TAPS or the other facilities. And the jobs, are expected to be around 840 long-term with a peak over 4,000 during construction. The North Slope Borough will collect additional property tax. As I mentioned, ASRC is going to benefit from the subsurface aspect with the state of Alaska due to the jointly managed land settlement. They, in essence, serve as an additional subsurface owner jointly with the state on certain of those leases. And the opportunities for Alaska business development, that is something that, we look hard for local options, state options for Alaska businesses when seeking services. And then one thing that I hope we will demonstrate clearly over the years to come is that we see partnership as key to our success. We're not a company that thinks we can just retreat to Fortress Oil Search and do it alone and do it ourselves and tell people how it's going to be. That's not our way of doing business, and we are looking forward to additional opportunities with partners and many facets of the project and future development.
Quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
So how long do you think this construction will take?
So we, in our prior schedule, had anticipated FID in 2021, the peak of construction occurring through 21, 22, and on into 23, with first oil as early as 23. But probably into 24. And part of that was going to depend on the timing of those decisions relative to the sealift schedule.
So, Joe, I have a kind of a two-pronged question here. So I'm reading the statement, opportunities for economic development in strategic partnership with Alaska Native regional and village corporations subsidiaries of the North Slope. Are you referring to landowners there?
Yes, sir.
All right. So the state of Alaska is a landowner.
Correct.
So where, what economic opportunities and development are you considering with the state of Alaska?
Well, this is certainly one through a state corporation. In terms of the broader suite of service companies and support services that are provided on the slope, we've got additional opportunities beyond what we've done so far. Right now, all we've had is civil work on the slope. As we look further towards ultimately construction and operations, you know, from my former hometown, the folks at Flowline certainly stand to benefit from the work. We have seen contract participation. One of the two civil operators, we had the Kookpik affiliated operation with AFC, Nanook AFC, Ellsworth's company, as well as Cruise Construction. So Cruise handled a significant part of our work this past winter. So, you know, there are, you know, non-ANCSA businesses that have and will benefit, and we think there's going to be those kind of opportunities available.
So you mentioned the civil side. That's what you've done so far. Do you anticipate that on the pipelines and the infrastructure, the production facilities, the same?
There will be a variety of opportunities. Part of the question, though, is going to be whether this is becomes an EPC thing, that construction takes place in other places and modules are then brought in. We're still going to need lots of labor and effort on the ground here on the slope, though.
Okay. So I guess, so you mentioned two, which I'm familiar with, both civil contractors. Are they both affiliated with any of these regional or village corporations?
So one of them is. Nanook AFC is affiliated with Kookpik. Cruise is not.
Okay. And how did you decide on how to reward the work?
So we typically go through a tender process and bid that work out. In some cases, we have a full-blown procurement. In others, where we have a sense of what the market is, we're able to do a limited procurement. And an example of that would be on drilling, where rig rates are pretty well known on the slope, or at least they were a year ago.
Okay.
Maybe not today.
All right, I'll let you continue.
So this past winter, as I mentioned fleetingly, we had an exploration campaign this past winter. We had two rigs. This map shows the exploration projects in sort of the yellow highlighted area, the first one being Mitcook to the north and east of our PICA area, and Stirrup to the south that was targeting prospects that had previously been drilled on wells known as Horseshoe. The area in blue is the area in which we operated the civil season, and that it was one of two seasons. So basically phase one extends the road from Mustang, which I think this organization is familiar with, all the way out to the site of our drill site B, the MDB pad, which is near the banks of the Colville River. And we also laid down the pads for the NOP and the NPF, the operation facility pad and the production facility pad. Additionally, we made upgrades to the Mustang Road, and we installed a bridge across the Maluvich River. On the exploration side, the results were rather encouraging. Both at Mitcook and Stirrup, we encountered significant hydrocarbon resource, and we, you know, continue to evaluate the data. There was a certain amount of that we had to release to the ASX as part of our regulatory filings. What we found at Mitcook was at the high end of sort of our estimates going in, and Horseshoe Stirrup, the headline there is that the flow tests were the highest rates for a single stage frack in the Nanushuk zone that we've seen yet, and so we're very excited about that opportunity.
I cannot read on there or on here. Can you just tell me what those colors are that I'm looking at?
Sure. The blue is the zone that the civil work was conducted in, and then the yellowish color is where the exploration activity took place. And the reason it's bigger than just a dot is that includes the ice roads that were necessary to move the rigs out to location. In the case of McCook, we were out quite early. We had the earliest on ice exploration well in 43 years. We spud on Christmas Day. And as it turns out, that was really good because when the consequences of COVID hit, we were almost done with the season. And so we were able to go ahead and complete our work safely and get the results that now have us rather encouraged.
What's the green?
The green, that's a good question. It is indicative of the federal acreage, the NPRA. So we are, most of our leases are east of the Colville and on state land. We do have a couple here and there in NPRA at this time.
Keller?
Mr. Chairman, thanks for joining us. Mr. Baelish, where's the Mustang Road on this map?
So I have another map here that should help highlight where that is. You see here, and it's always a challenge to try and indicate what's what on some of these things, but if you can make out the difference between the blue and the green, on this, the blue is the portion of the Mustang Road that was upgraded as part of the work that we did this winter, and then the green is the new road going out to NDB. And the things that we did at Mustang were basically to upgrade the road so that big rigs could move across the road. The way it was constructed would not have allowed the equipment that we needed to move out to location to pass through.
And do you expect other entities to use this road as well?
Well, that might be a point to talk about in the context of the MOU, but short answer is we certainly are open to that. And that'll all depend on, whether or not other operators in the area need or want it. The company that operates in NPRA, they have a tried and true path that they use for their ice roads and ice bridge every year, where they're close to where their pipeline crosses the Colville. So at this point, I would leave it to them to comment on whether or not they might want to use. No, a different one.
So, Joe, you referred to an MOU. This resolution states that one has already been negotiated.
That's right, sir.
So we get to see that, Alan?
That's attached with the package.
Hi. You guys see it?
Good.
And Mr. Tibbs also cost reimbursement.
Is it item 6D?
Right behind the.
Oh, there it is, right there. Okay.
If you didn't take your report, all the parts would find it easily.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Switch.
I can't say the word that begins with an S.
So, knowing that you do have a background in civil work, Mr. Chairman, thought we'd just put a little imagery up showing the work that we did get done this past winter. it's interesting dealing with a lot of folks on the southern half of the hemisphere who, you know, have been a little cautious about showing dark material against pure white snow. Up here, we think that's beautiful, but it is, you know, a sensitivity for us, and something we try to keep in mind, and is how other parties and other groups are going to view the activity we undertake, and it's a responsibility that we take up pretty closely. But you know, during the late spring, the road is now visible from satellite imagery, so that was pretty cool to see.
A road in Alaska, congratulations!
So far.
So Joe, one of the things I don't see on here on your maps or any place in your presentation is the on the access and where the actual your pads are and your production facilities is the land ownership.
So
both subsurface and surface.
I would be happy to provide that in a follow-up for you guys. But there is a portion of the NDB road that crosses the acreage that the surface ownership is Kukpik. And otherwise, we are on state surface.
Okay. No federal land?
No federal land in this case.
Is there any obviously we're familiar with, and you're very familiar with state requirements crossing their lands. What is the difference in crossing private land, say Kukpik's land?
Well, as a private landowner, Kukpik does enjoy certain privileges, and for that reason, we've entered into a land use agreement with them. And so, one of the things that we are committed to doing is ensuring that Kukpik residents, Nooksit residents, are able to make use of the road. That's not altogether different than the experience on the Spine Road and the rest of the North Slope infrastructure. So, in terms of the state, they don't have necessarily a particular requirement, but this has been approved in the course of the unit agreement and approval process. And so one of the things that we do in the course of our business with DNR is say, here's our plan. We're going to build this road, this pad, and they say, yep, you can, and that's it. Which presents a little bit of an issue that we'll need to investigate with both Kukpik and DNR, because there is not, as it sits today, a title instrument that says, here's the pick a road, and here's who owns it. Because in both the Kukpik and DNR cases, it's been approved as part of our plan of ops, not as a specific right-of-way.
So you just beat me to my next question on land ownership and how you tie it into the financing and the use agreements and whatnot.
Right.
And what underlying agreements you already have in place,
mm-hmm.
Especially with the private side, and the modifications that have to do that. And the exposure to the public process a little bit there.
Sure.
So
we began a conversation here late spring, early summer with Ada about the possibility of utilizing basically the Red Dog model in the case of this road. And, you know, it's a concept that, at least in the 50,000 foot view, looks workable, but we need to go down considerable bit in the elevation and get a closer look at some of the things. But big picture, the idea would be that ADA issues some form of debt in order to purchase the road that we have constructed. We then would in turn lease it back and operate it.
Including the Mustang part?
Well, we don't own the Mustang part.
But you're using it.
We are using it. And I think that's...
You're in charge too, aren't you?
Well, we've invested... We've invested millions of dollars in making it better.
Millions, look at me, they're just using side dumps. That's so cheap to do with side dumps, you can't hardly count it as an expense.
Well, we're not negotiating that here today, so I think we can all calm down.
He's kind of trying to set the stage for you, Joe. It's burning.
I wore a vest today, maybe a little extra under it.
Is that bulletproof?
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
So in other words, what you're saying is this is going to be kind of a one-off, or it's going to be the poster child for future, with public and private land ownerships, where a third party comes in and does a debt against it to finance in order to facilitate development.
We certainly think this has got a lot of potential, and there wasn't a lot of familiarity with the Red Dog model in an oil and gas company. So it was one of the things that I was able to bring to the table for the company is a perspective on the ways that the state can and is willing to help with development here in Alaska. So that is ultimately, the big rocks. But in order to really figure out whether it can work or not, we've developed this MOU, and this is sort of a list, sort of in priority order, of the work that we think needs to take place. We first need to determine how to share the costs of this investigation, which the cost reimbursement agreement spells out. And we then need to work with a financial advisor, an FA, to identify what forms of financing might be available and determine whether or not that works for both parties. All parties, I should say, because ultimately, while we're the operator, our partners at Repsol will have to approve this in the end. But our early engagement with them has been very, very positive. Assuming that there is, something that's attractive to both parties, we then need to turn to CookPick and DNR and perfect title. As I mentioned, the infrastructure to date has been approved as part of the plan of ops submittal process. In terms of the state, there's a couple of ways to identify a specific right-of-way easement, or what's called an 850 easement is another means that we could discreetly identify the area that the road is on and say, this is a specific, instrument that can be, sold or traded or assigned or, whatever that is going to require. So with DNR, whatever process we follow under existing law will take some amount of time, and there will be a public element to it. Yeah. With CookPick, they're a private landowner, and so it'll be a matter of working through the issues with them as to whether or not we'll be able to reach an agreement that works for all the parties.
Is there any kind of agreement from AFRC also?
To date, the work that we've done here, we don't believe so, but ASRC and the state DNR do coordinate on sort of all things related to these jointly managed lands, I'm not aware of anything specific that would require an ASRC only kind of decision. Our investigation might uncover something though. We then would need to have a valuation conducted. We know what we paid for it, and I'm sure there are folks who would tell me they could do it cheaper, but you know, we'll have to arrive at a value for the road. And then assuming all of that works out, there's a matter of papering it up, having an agreement, and then deliver a final package to the respective boards. This one, ours, and Repsol's. So.
Well, we know, Joe, that 24 months ago, it cost X to drill a well.
Yep.
And we know today, it's cost X minus today to drill a well.
Oil had negative value.
And 2 years ago, it was going to be X minus or plus. So we know that's a given. So, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking is easy to do on cost analysis.
Well, we're confident that there's a reasonable way to get all this work done and have no reason to think that any of this would be an obstacle, but we can't assume our way through the whole process.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do put a very high value on our relationship with Cookpick, we've had some preliminary conversations with them, and you know, they have basically said, you know, look, you're going to have to bring us along, explain things to us, and before they're going to say yes to anything, right? I mean, that's reasonable. That is a relationship that we're taking great care with, and we'll continue to do so. But you know.
But
this
other than the road, where do they have the other interests besides the property, their land, and the are they a part? Do they have a working interest owner or anything
no.
like that? Okay.
No.
Did you say that ASRC has ownership in the subsurface?
In some of the leases, yes.
You know what kind of percentage is? Is it 1%, 1.5%?
So it's as I recall. There are some leases, and DNR basically gets to manage all of them on ASRC's behalf under the terms of the agreement, but there are some leases where it's clear ASRC has the interest, some that the state has the interest, and then there's sort of this zone of dispute where they agreed, hey, we'll just split it. And that was how they resolved the litigation back in the 80s that was behind this.
So Kupik has no... small piece, even though the regional corp has I know they have the subsurface portion of it, but so you're telling me that the village corp gets none of that?
So
that was a village
under
corp,
7i, under 7i, you know, everybody
they share 70%.
Yeah, everybody benefits, and I think 7h is for the village side. So right
there's something
there is
they get yeah.
There is some subsurface interest that's indirect that comes back to Cookpick.
And Cookpick has some of the surface rights as the village corporation.
They do.
And so you cross some of their...
We are squarely on Cookpick surface acreage.
Hopefully they get something.
I'm sure they're extracting it now, Bernie.
Well, I mean, I hope so. I mean, they've been there for 10,000 years.
No, we do have an agreement.
Should have.
Not Cooper.
You haven't read the ads. Well, that's Bering Strait.
Yeah, that's right. Almost as long as the fish.
Okay.
So, in terms of, you know, why consider this, you know, with ADA, it appears to us, and nobody's corrected me yet, that this fits squarely within the mission of ADA, the statutory mandate. It's in support of key infrastructure, development of Alaska's state resources. So these are state leases again, 16 and two-thirds royalty rate. Plenty of jobs, lots of jobs. Just as an illustration, this past winter's work, the gravel operation was the largest since Alpine more than 2 million cubic yards were laid, and we were told we hired every CDL available in Alaska. We hired all the good ones and all the bad ones. So, there was a bit of a congestion factor, let's say, out there. And then revenue, not only for the state, but for Alaska businesses. So on our side, what is attractive is, you know, we made this pre-investment in this road and paths, and ordinarily you would wait until you had made your FID, but because, you know, we knew we wanted to move quickly, we were going to have to season the gravel, farm it, which we're doing this summer, by the way.
I was going to ask you about that.
I thought you might.
Yeah.
I can tell you more.
Well, the road isn't done until that's done.
Well, so we're farming it right now, and actually the progress we're making, some of the pads too. So, and then reinforcing certain sidewalls in areas that are prone to flooding and things like that to make sure that we don't have any environmental problems next spring or any future spring. So,
are you armoring those? Or putting armor rock on?
Whether it's sandbags or riprap, kind of depends on the location, but yes.
And that's going on right now?
Yes. So it allows us to recapture this capital that we've sunk into this and bring it back to the project to keep moving forward. And whether that is, you know, as part of our overall FID financing plan, you know, will depend on, you know, how the rest of this year goes. But we would be able to identify specifically where that capital will go and how it is advancing the project and the requirements under the statutes.
So that plays into, if you were to extract capital back out, it would go back into the project?
It would, yes. You know, one thing that's going to differentiate us as an operator here for the next while is we don't have competing projects around the world. Our projects, our opportunities are right here.
Okay. So I know you're not going to answer this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So what do you think for revenue for Alaska, for the state of Alaska, for key infrastructure, for a state-owned corporation, is the appropriate rate of return?
It all depends on how much risk you want to take.
Well, if you're buying and leasing back an infrastructure, critical infrastructure, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And our faith is in the operation, the operator, and their ability to get their first Arctic oil
to the market. Worked in the Arctic ever.
To the market, right?
I hear you.
You know, so you know, you've had the hat on this side of the table before, Joe.
I have.
And now you're on that side of the table.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, I mean, at Red Dog, I think we're 8.5-9% on that after, you know, that's net rate of return. So what do you think in the what I call the biggest poker game in the world, the oil and gas business, what do you think a state corporation?
So I would, again, come back to the question.
Alan Becker smiling, waiting. I want to hear what he says.
Well, Joe mentioned Red Dog as an example.
Yeah,
that would be at least 9%.
I think Red Dog is a great example.
It's up at 9%, so
yeah,
that's where we need to be.
And here's the thing. Ada made that bet before the road was permitted or built.
Yeah, that's right.
Totally different circumstance here.
Yeah, but the,
no permitting risk.
But the mineral
risk. No, they were the state.
But the minerals being sold was not as volatile.
I think the history would prove otherwise.
Oh no, it never went negative.
Wow.
Ever.
I feel for 12 cents. There wasn't shell.
There wasn't zinc right here. And boats, ships all around the world waiting to be processed.
So that's a misstatement.
We're not trying to pick on you, Joe.
No.
I love every one of you.
Yeah, you can tell the truth when you leave the room.
Oh, I have more respect for him than you can imagine. I mean, he's
He's from North Pole, man. North Pole.
Yeah, North Pole boy. And I mean, I'll tell you.
Survive that. He's got to be tough.
No, you've done a great job for Alaska. So if we're asking some tough questions, believe me, you know, you should thank him because you taught us the game. I watched you ask all the tough questions of people and half the time go against them. So, I mean, I appreciate what you've done for the state. So.
Well, let's let him see. Let's see him wiggle out of this answer. Let's see how good he is.
So
he's testified in front of Congress.
I don't have a number for you today.
Oh, that's good.
We know either 8.5 or 9 because that's what Red Dog. We know that. You mentioned Red Dog.
Yeah, I did mention
Red Dog. Should have done that.
And I would point to, you know, what risk are each of the parties taking? And there does need to be recognition that it's not a risk-free proposition. So.
No, it isn't.
Well, then we want more if it's a risky one.
Anna?
So, Mr. Balash, was there, when we compared to Red Dog, was it already in final investment decision when the road was purchased?
I would have to go back and refresh my own memory. But my recollection of the history is that in order for things to go forward, it was actually Ada who applied for and received the right-of-way for the road and port. In this case, and so that was prior to construction.
We have Mustang Road. We're part of it already.
I think I might have.
You're the only participant in this conference.
I think
press any key to continue
DNR
this conference.
So I'm familiar with that one too.
Yeah.
The conference will now continue.
Mr. Balash, the risk that I see for Ada is the extraction of the capital out with no final investment decision. So how much time we're out there waiting for final investment. Let me finish this up. The time that we're waiting for final investment decision is a risk
Ada. So I'm not going to offend Joe or his company, but I guarantee you they've got way more than $200 million invested in this. And it's sitting there. What do you got, a billion in it?
If you were to add up what we paid for the land position, the money that we've spent on exploration, and the investment this spring in the capital, yes, we're higher than that number.
All right. So we'll just for round purposes.
I believe so.
The road is 20% of your net investment. So you got $800 million out there that you got to get some rate of return on, regardless of the road. I would think that's a lot of pressure for a financial investment decision sooner than later.
We are very motivated.
Yeah.
Particularly the Alaska Business Unit. Where today, we're a taker from headquarters in Sydney. And I think many of you who've been in private business understand that's not always a comfortable position. So we would like very much to get ourselves on the road to construction and first oil as soon as possible. But given the changes in the oil markets, you know, we're having to be very deliberate about this and have to answer all of the questions about our risk. And so, you know, coming back to the question of what rate of return, what risk is Ada going to be taking on here, that's all part of what this investigation is geared to determine, right? Because one question is, well, what are going to be the basis of terms for lease payments? You know, is it just going to be, you know, a monthly or annual, here it is, no matter what? Or is it going to be based on production? Is it going to be, you know, there's all kinds of ways you can tackle this problem.
Well, it's going to be a monthly plus kicker based on the price of oil.
Well, first of all, you just said,
I like that, Joe.
We don't have problems on this board. We only have opportunities.
That's right.
So we never had a problem here, ever, just opportunities. So that's the wrong bad.
We want none of the downside and all the upside.
Heads I win, tails you lose.
What's that?
Heads I win, tails you lose.
Yeah. Julie. Mic on.
Sorry, this is Julie Sandy. So, Mr. Balish, can you specify what the current number of Alaskans are that you have employed and what your anticipated or hopeful number might be?
Thank you for the question. Through the chair, Member Sandy, we currently have around 130 employees here in our Alaska offices and on the North Slope. We expect that when we reach construction, that the peak is going to be in excess of 4,000. Now, that's contractors. It's an all-in number. And that when we then move to production and operations, that we'll be closer to 800. You know, that's going to vary as we continue to do additional exploration work. As I mentioned, we had two discoveries this past winter. You know, we think the potential is there for us to get this project underway, start generating cash that just continues to get on into the Alaska investment and furthering the additional exploration and delineation and ultimately construction of additional fields.
Further questions for Joe? Well, Joe, it's great to see you. Great presentation. Appreciate your candor, question and answers. Looking forward to working with you.
I do as well. I worried a little bit about having to explain certain aspects of state government to my management, and I'll just say I'm glad I wasn't having to explain DOT procurement.
Yeah.
Hey, you were head of.
No, not DOT.
No.
The sovereign nation of?
Yeah, no.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so that brings us to Resolution G20-24, MOU, Oil Search Ithaca Project Surface Infrastructure. I'll entertain a motion.
I move Resolution Number G20-24. This is Bill.
I second. This is Julie Sandy.
Thank you. Further discussion.
Does this include what we're doing here? Does this include the cost reimbursement agreement? Is that part of this? Is that what we're going to vote on?
Yeah, it's the cost reimbursement is explained in Section 2 of the MOU,
yeah.
Or of the resolution.
Can somebody explain to me this $225,000? Is that the money that they expect us to expend up front?
Mr. Chairman, our recorder, Sherry, did you have a question? Or, okay, thank you. Do we want to read the title of the resolution in? Or
I already did.
Did you do that already?
Yeah,
thank
you. Alan? On the
$225,000? The budget we have right now is a cap at $225,000, which would be covered by Oil Search as we're doing our feasibility analysis. And that is payable by them for our expenses.
Okay, I didn't get that out of here, but so you're saying that's reimbursable, that's like a forced account?
Yes.
Okay.
And it states that in the MOU, right?
Right. Any other questions? Are we ready for the question? Sherry, would you pull the board?
Ms. Andy?
Yes.
Ms. Kennedy?
Yes.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Mr. Roper?
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Carr?
Yes.
Mr. Freed?
Yes.
That wasn't a very good yes. I mean, it was kind of a wishy-washy yes.
He already put his mask on.
It was more like the S word.
The motion passed?
Yes, motion passed.
Yeah, thank you. Alan, Joe, we look forward to you guys working together and coming up with a solution that benefits everybody. Wish you all the best. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay, let's go back to B on our agenda, which is Resolution G-22, authorizing capitalization of the SETS fund and financing the Soldotna Quartz Creek transmission line.
Mr.
Alan?
Chairman, before the board is a resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority approving financing of a qualified energy development for the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project SSP line acquisition.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I understand that the board has had a review with the Alaska Energy Authority on the acquisition. This resolution really pertains to the financing of the Alaska Energy Authority in their acquisition of this Q-Line. What we're proposing is to provide $16 million plus the cost of issuance and necessary reserves for the required financing of the project. And I do need to outline that we do need to correct the resolution language to reflect that, that it is a request to the authority to provide $16 million plus the cost of issuance and necessary reserves of the required financing of the project.
So what's the exact wordage? So it would be under whereas A is requesting authority to provide up to $16 million plus?
We're deleting the up to, so provide and delete up to
$16
million, including now language, plus the cost of issuance and necessary reserves.
Is that the only place you need it?
There is an additional point on section 1, page 2 of the resolution, which is exactly the same, deleting up to, then goes on to say $16 million, including new language, plus the cost of issuance and necessary reserves.
Okay.
And then that also occurs on section 3 on the same page, with the exact same deletion of up to, goes on to $16 million, including new language, plus the cost of issuance and necessary reserves.
How was that missed on this resolution?
The original language had incorporated up to $16 million, and then the sources of use of the funds was updated to highlight the additional necessity of the reserves and the issuance costs.
All right. Well, discussion. Albert?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve resolution number G20-22, a resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority approving financing of a qualified energy development for Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project SSQ line acquisition.
I second it. Bernie?
All right, so now it's on the table for discussion.
So just now that I'm on the right page, I have to let everybody know that I have to recuse myself on this because of the conflict with the MEA Board of Directors.
Yeah, Alan was a little slighted there. Okay. Well, so I think, Alan, my discussion on this to get the conversation started is you want to kind of do the highlights on the term sheet, where the money is going, who are the people paying the money, what's the source of funds, and what's the underlying guarantee.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this is Alan Weissner. The proposal that staff has before the board is to finance the Alaska Energy Authority. They are the owner of the Bradley Lake Project for the state of Alaska. They are the issuer of the bonds that are under the bond resolution. The financing that we're requesting, which is $16 million plus the cost of issuance and reserve, necessary reserves, would fall under that bond resolution. AEA would be issuing new bonds, of which ADA would be acquiring. The term is 20 years. The interest rate is set under the SETS regulation. We are proposing to finance the AEA through the SETS regulations. We would be transferring funds, and that's part of the request and resolution of transferring funds from the revolving fund to SETS to make this investment. Now, in our review, we're looking at the structure of ADA's financing as being substantially complying with the SETS regulations. This is a project that fulfills the definition of a qualified energy development under the statutes that were created for the SETS. For the SETS fund program, and financing AEA is in the best interests of the state of Alaska's ratepayers to enable their acquisition of the transmission line and incorporate it into the Bradley Lake project.
All right, and the underlying guarantors are who?
The payment under this falls under the power sales agreement, which is the six rail belt utilities that are buying capacity and paying rates under that power sales agreement.
Would you put for the record state the six rail belt utilities?
The six rail belt utilities are just getting to my memorandum on it. Is the Chugach Electric Association, the Anchorage Municipal Light and Power, Golden Valley Electric Association, Matanuska Electric Association, Homer Electric Association, and the Seward Electric Utility.
Okay. Anna?
Mr. Chairman, in a previous meeting that I attended, I asked about the value of what's being purchased. Could we put that on the record? Because I'm interested in the wording that we've chosen for the resolution, because I thought that 16.7 million or somewhere around there. Chairman, I thought that but the asset's not valued at 16 million, and so the reserves are already.
The reserves are already included in a number that's close to that, so I'm interested in the verbiage that we've chosen and if we could explain why.
Ellen?
Through the chair, Ms. McKinnon, the reserves that we're talking about include reserves that are required under the bond resolution, which is including the funding of the capital reserve, which is an amount of estimated at this point, and that will be finalized with closing at $1.1 million. So there's additional with the acquisition price, which is defined to be at $13.3 million. There are additional remediation investments that are being made for the 69 kV line. Then again, based upon the information we've received from the borrower, Alaska Energy Authority, the remediation and upgrade elements that are being supported by the Bradley Lake Management Committee is in the amounts of a little over $2 million. So in aggregate with the acquisition price, the remediation, the reserves that are necessary there, and then the closing costs gets us to the total 16.7.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that. It's just the verbiage that I'm wondering about. He is requesting to provide
Are you looking at the resolution, Anna?
Yes, I am.
Which paragraph?
I'm looking at the third, whereas it's what we changed a little bit, which is fine.
Okay.
Up to 16 million. I thought the 16 million already included some reserves. And so when we're saying a necessary reserves at the bottom of that, it's just unclear to me based on what was just presented to us why necessary reserves, because we already had defined necessary reserves based on the $16 million number, and then I knew there was associated costs for closing and other necessary expenses to finalize.
Like $700,000 or something.
Right, some number like that. So my understanding was the $13 million plus the reserves was already included in the $16 million, and necessary reserves is what's throwing me, because I thought that was already in there. But I knew that there was some additional cost of upwards of a range of $500,000 to $1 million that is in flux right now based on need.
And this would be based upon, as the term sheet highlights, this is Alan Weissner, as the term sheet highlights, this would be based upon a final sources and uses of funds. The current estimate for closing costs, which is the issuance cost, is in excess of $200,000. The amount of the reserves does take it over the $16 million, as it's currently being estimated, and we need to ultimately have that finalized for closing.
Thank you for clarifying that there is some reserves already calculated into the $16 million, but there may be additional funds that need to be acquired in the loan process.
It is likely, yes.
Thank you, Anna. Alan, can you speak to the other benefits besides of purchasing the line, what the benefits are to the state for ADA for the finances?
It enables AEA to, through the Bradley Lake Management Committee, to make a decision on upgrades for that line, which provides additional capacity for the rail belt utilities.
there's currently the expansion that happened with Battle Creek. That's not being fully allocated along the line, an enhancement there. In with their unified decision, if they choose to make that for the upgrade, provides additional benefits for ratepayers. The acquisition is part of that enabling element. The acquisition itself benefits its ratepayers by removing litigation, which is currently outstanding and potentially ongoing without this acquisition in place. And I believe in general there's benefits that's under the Bradley Lake Management Committee management operation, but with the transmission line being part of the Bradley Lake project.
Okay. Anything about litigation or anything like that?
That's what I mentioned was the acquisition itself removes the current litigation that's between the railroad utilities and Homer Electric.
Okay.
Bernie, do you have any idea, could you tell us on any idea of what that litigation might have cost so far, cost the ratepayers?
The estimates that I saw was in the lines of close to $20 million.
Already spent. So this stops all future litigation on that particular line, correct?
Yeah, and continuing litigation, right? The cost of that.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't think there's no such thing as no future litigation, but at least right now, the existing, the past is the boogie of the past.
Thank you for that correction.
New slate.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
No further questions. I will ask for the question. Anna, do you have anything further?
Mr. Chairman, I just, for the general public, we had a fire that phased Alaska and hit Homer Electric and disrupted service for over 90 days. And one small utility had to prioritize their resources to be able to bring service back to their the people that they serve in their community, which created a drag for most of the rail belt utilities in their ability to access lower cost energy for Alaskans. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very fair.
Yeah, very
thank
fair.
You. And the utilities, since they are sometimes nonprofits, but they are in their own geography, have tended to place their own interests first for their ratepayers and those ratepayers that benefit them, which has created litigation over the course of decades. Is that fair? Or a disruption? And so this, the issue of financing that's before us is to try to resolve some lower cost energy that could benefit all parties along the rail belt and deploy resources in the event of disruption to that transmission line again by the utilities that should they agree to enter into this particular process that it will eliminate those and in turn, as Director Carl said, provide more stability in the long term and less litigation or we hope no litigation by bringing the parties together. So I would like to commend the utilities that came to the table to help Alaskans resolve this issue. As I understand it, there is significant line loss at this time that may not have been originally in this corridor before, and that having people, utilities working in cooperation together can deploy resources differently or engage ADA differently and to provide services through SETS to Alaskans where more people benefit from this long-term investment. Is that a fair statement?
Ms. McKinnon, I believe it is a fair statement. I think there's a lot of benefit in ADA working with the Alaska Energy Authority on this particular type of project.
Thank you. And so for those that are my constituents or those people that I used to represent in a former life and those that go beyond all the way up to Fairbanks and Golden Valley Electric, this is a way to reduce carbon emissions by using a renewable project that is already in existence and a primary responsibility of ADA to look at those issues and try to assist in that infrastructure. So for those reasons, I'll be supporting this particular proposal. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Julie.
So I just wanted to clarify. So I think that we've heard Mr. Weissner speak about some of the benefits, including the reliability and the cost savings and access, and I think I have all the information I need on that. And then, Alan, did I also hear that this substantially meets what your understanding of the criteria is for the use of the SETS funding?
Through the chair, Ms. Sandy, yes, that is what I stated. That in our review and structuring the financing, that this substantially complies with the SETS regulations and requirements.
Okay, thank you.
That the project itself is a qualified energy project as defined within the SETS statutes.
Thank you.
All right, seeing no further questions, I will now ask Sherry to pull the board for the question.
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Fogel?
Yes.
Mr. Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you, Sherry. That brings us to item number D, and you wanted to visit about that, pulling that off the agenda, Alan?
Mr. Chair, we're going to be removing that from the agenda.
You would like to remove it?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any objecting to removing resolution G20-23 from the agenda?
No.
Seeing here, none is removed. Brings us to item number 7 on our agenda. A is an ADA organizational chart. I'll let you go through A through F on your director comments, new executive director.
Mr. Chair, what I would first like to be able to do is thank the board for the opportunity that you provided me as the new executive director for ADA. The needs to advance ADA's mission supporting economic development within the state of Alaska is not taken lightly, especially in our current environment and the needs of our businesses during this crisis. So I look forward to working with everyone, yourselves, people within the state, in defining how ADA can fulfill and best achieve this mission. So again, thank you very much for that opportunity. In saying that, what I would like to then sort of address is with the remaining agenda items, we do have the organization chart, which is the current update on our personnel. We do have several positions that we are currently in the process of filling, which one of these would include a replacement for the chief investment officer, which was a position I formerly held.
All right.
I'd like to also then follow up with the G1921 report, which is an update on our access road projects currently involved, which is the Ambler Access Road as well as the Wesselson Access Road, and defining the budgets that have been approved prior to this point in time and the actual expenditures at this time.
Where are you at on the program manager for the Ambler Access?
That we need to initiate.
Okay.
That is one of the organizational issues that needs to be updated, and we will have full, to state, we will have full information and the structure on that by the next board meeting.
All right. Julie?
This is Board Member Sandy. I just, Alan, do you know what your current vacancy rate is as compared to what your normal vacancy rate is? If not, you can get back to me about it.
I would have to get back to you on the specific information on that, right, because we have had positions that are at various stages have not been filled.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be on an organizational basis what our current rate is that remains unfilled as we're in the interim process of filling those positions. So I would need to get an update on the actual percentage versus where we are currently.
Our next meeting is fine. Thank you.
Then we have the information on the loan dashboard, which is a little bit of a follow-up and continued information on the breakdown of our loan participation portfolio as well as some of our direct loans throughout the state. And then with the infrastructure development and project finance asset management updates, we have the current fact sheets on those programs and the current update that is provided for each of those programs, and that's available on our website for people's information. And then also attached to the board packet is the quarterly report to the legislature on the Interior Energy Project. And, Mr. Chair, one of the things I do want to follow up on is on the previous board meeting, you had requested that we receive quarterly financial statements from IGU. We
Under our agreements with IGU, we only receive annual financial statements.
Okay.
However, they have also been providing us, on request, supportive financial information, and we will be providing that to the board directly.
All right.
And that is the end of the board or the director comments.
Questions for our executive director?
Not particularly on this, but overall, so I understand we're going to meet soon and have a strategic planning session, and we'll probably be part of your board meeting. I would ask that while you're looking at the agency rates and thinking about the structure of our strategic planning session, that you'll be thinking about what's the best realignment of the organization at the same time, and give the board an opportunity to provide some input for you at large hiring.
Okay, thank you.
Sherry, for your information, we're going to have a work session on the day before the next board meeting. I think it's the 15th would be the work session for the facilitator at some location to be determined, whether it's here or somewhere.
What about a facilitator?
We'll have a facilitator at it. Alan will get with you on all that.
And we'll send you our ideas for facilitators and all the agenda items.
Please, that would be welcomed.
Yep. Let's set a target of within the next 14 days to give Alan suggested topics.
Thank
you. Yeah, we'll make sure. And please CC other board members so that we're not duplicating the same thing. We'll start with the commissioner. Since she's already got it. She's already got it.
And there's more. That's the half start.
Communications, is that in our package, Sherry?
I had received no public comments since the last board meeting except for the one that I emailed to you today.
Okay.
From Mr. Hines.
All right. And he did make a public comment on the record today. So, board comments.
Well, I'd like to welcome you to your official new role, which you best select. I look forward to working with you for the next few years. Helping to solve some of these problems we're facing. I think we'll get along, but we can make a dent, I'm sure.
Thank you.
I would like to thank you for taking the job, and we don't have problems, only opportunities. I don't want to correct you, Commissioner, but no problems at this board, not least on this end of the table. Here we have opportunities, and we will solve what you call your problems with our opportunities, with Alan's help. So, Alan, welcome aboard, and thank you again for taking the job.
Thank you. Further comments? Well, I'd like to also welcome Alan and look forward to working with him. I'd like to take this time to thank our subcommittee working on our financial plan and under Albert's leadership. I understand a lot of hours putting in with staff, particularly yesterday. I'd like to thank board member Ms. Sandy and Anna McKinnon for coming up and spending that time from being away from home. And I'd also like to thank Sherry and staff for stepping for putting on a good board today. I'll note it's only 4:22. Gosh, what are we going to do with the rest of the day? Well, I know I have to go out to... Where am I going, Bill? Where am I? Settlers Bay. I guess I'm going to the lodge.